morning, sir. Before we get started, let me get your name.
My name is Richard Wells.
Okay, let me get you just a hold on one moment while the Honorable Mr. Johnson gets his paperwork together, because he will be conducting your hearing, be chairing your hearing in just one moment, sir. So if you just hold on, you will be the first one for the morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
I'm Johnson, right?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to say everybody can
All right, sir. Just for the record, could you state your name, your ADC number for us, sir?
Yes, my name is Richard Lionel Price. My ADC number is 065633.
Okay, Mr. Lionel, I'm going to introduce you to the board members this morning that will be conducting your hearing. To my far left, sir, is the Honorable Luis Quinones. Coming down the line is the Honorable David Neal. In the middle is our board chair, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. Coming to right next to me, to my left, is the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. And, sir, my name is Michael Johnson. You're here appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a parole hearing. I also understand that Ms. Lucella, Dallas?
Luella? Yes, sir.
Okay, is also here to speak on your behalf, sir. So we're going to get started with your hearing this morning, okay?
Okay, thank you.
So you're appearing before this board for an absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Serving a concurrent life sentence for armed robbery, kidnapping, aggravated assault, and kidnapping. Is that right, sir? You became parole eligible on February 6th, 2013 on these charges. You have four life sentences, and each of them are running concurrent. The sentence began on January 13th, 1987. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You have taken several classes since you've been incarcerated. You've been doing some program with parenting classes, peer facilitator, 16-week course teaching inmates, and as an instructor, you continue to grow and learn during each of your sessions and your evaluations. You have some of your evaluations attached to the actual file here, along with some letters of support that you actually have. You also, I think there was one letter of support from a correction officer that you had attached to it too, sir. According to your institution progress report, sir, you plan to live with your wife, Luella. Brown is at 2515 West Vale Drive in Phoenix. You will be going to the Southwest Truck Driver School at 6021 West Sherman Street in Phoenix, Arizona, and you will have your wife's support along with approximately $30,000 savings that you have. You will also have the support of the First Christian Church in Phoenix and Pastor Chuck Thurman. You said that you will attend celebrity celebrate recovery once a week, and also have the support of the Pastor Art Tafaya of the Christian Church in Arkendale. That's according to your release plan, sir. But were any of them coming down here to appear today, or you just have them as support?
I just have my support. I didn't want to take away from the ministry.
Okay. So also, it says that you have not received any major or minor discipline for the last 5 years. There are no special conditions. I do want to make a note that there is a letter dated March 27th of 2018 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office that objects to you have been released out of parole since based on the nature of the offense and defendant's conduct. It's clear that the defendant has little regard for the community and should serve his entire sentence. So I'll make a note of that. Looking at your AIMS report and your progress on your AIMS report, sir, your last incident that you had, according to your AIMS report, was in 2010 I was dismissed, so I'm going to say your last incident that you had was in 09, so you haven't had any incidents since 09, is that right?
No, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so you had a special parole hearing that was not recommended to the governor in 95, 2012. You were granted parole, you were out of parole, you granted a 31.12A, is that right?
What year was that?
2012.
Yes, it was.
Okay, you were out for 2 years and then your parole was revoked in 2014, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then you had a parole hearing in 2015, 16, and 17 for regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, and during those three, they were all denied.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, according to the information that I have here on your parole revocation, when your parole was revoked in 2014, sir, you had relapse and started to use drugs. You had several drug tests that was positive for amphetamines that kept coming out to try to put you in the class, and you didn't go. What happened? What caused you to relapse after 2 years, sir?
A lot of work, that's what happened. I did a lot of construction work and landscaping work, and I just, it was stupid of me to try to do any type of work, period. I just overworked myself is what happened.
So overworking caused you to do drugs, sir?
Well, yes. It was a choice I made. I felt I had proof, not just to my wife, but to the community, and that I can do well, that I can be successful. I realized enough that this course of time being here that you don't force success. It doesn't, you know, especially at the expense of, you know, the safety of others and my freedom, you know, especially with my marriage, you don't force success. It will come, you know, when it comes, but I learned that that's how it works. With all these classes I've taken, and Dr. White asked me about 2 years ago, the class that helped me the most, and that was problem solving. I told that a couple of years back, and you know, since that time, these other classes that I've also made included, because, you know, it makes a balance in my life now. I've realized that you don't force anything to happen when you want good things to come, you know, in your life, you know, for others, especially when you love people. You don't force, you know, happiness. You can't force anything. You know, just do it well, and good things will happen to those who do well, and to make the best of your life. And that's me. I wasted 2 years of my life, and I was just so excited to be out, and I just wanted to work and to show people, to prove to people. But my wife told me I don't have to prove anything to people, because they'll see. And in time, it takes time. And, you know, they'll eventually say that I can do well and I can be successful. I don't have to force it.
Okay. So it says in warrant on your revocation that you made a statement to the parole officer that you didn't think it was a big deal because you were using meth for your allergies. Do you still think like that, sir?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Not
in any other words. Nope. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So, have you been taking any NAAA classes since you've been incarcerated, sir?
Yes, I've been in, we're taking these classes, one of the things I smart recovery, and being a facilitator, we facilitate these classes, and there's a step up in NAAA classes, smart recovery. The Labor Board here recognizes that as it's not a self-help, but it's a national program, and it's a reformable curriculum, and they're very strict about us following the curriculum and teaching the curriculum, and because of that, they were investing, we'll be with the people who complete the courses with us, and all their homework assignments and templates and curriculum as we did. So, you know, we have to stay on our A game at all time.
Okay. So, since you got reincarcerated, you haven't had any tickets or been in any programs, any problems, you've just been programming?
Yes, sir. Programming, I've been teaching a lot of the teenagers that come into the minors unit, they're turning 18, they're sitting over the admissions to send them to the unit, and it's the ICE care program, so we learn, teach them how to, be able to engage in other cultures and such, so that's one of the other classes we teach her, and to help them to, I guess, to get along with one another. All different races, all cultures, so it's a good thing, I really enjoy it, because I say myself, I'm not enjoying it, these guys have, most of them have a very focused life right now, ahead of them, so they have many questions, and I answer most of what I can, but one thing for sure, they seem to be a lot better behaved than I was when I was at their age.
Okay. So, going to moving on into when this incident occurred, you were actually on parole out of California when this robbery occurred. You had been, you were 27 years old when you committed this, and you were had been on probation and violated probation prior to that. Is that right?
Stupidly joyriding in vehicles, not that just a stupid challenge thing out there.
And you also had an extensive criminal record, but mainly for theft of vehicles. Is that, were you just like stealing cars or what?
No, it was like, growing up at that and being at that age, I had been in the military and, I lost my identity back then, so I didn't know exactly where I fit in. I didn't know maybe an American. I tried to fit in with different cultures, and that didn't work. And it was trying to fit in with people. It was the wrong people to fit in with. Didn't realize that when I got a life, that was back then. That was quite a while ago. So that's, I should have had those thoughts that people put on what was back then. I did realize, since that time, until now, present, I told you some of those experiences from back, I tell these government there, these teenagers, that is definitely one of those things you regret in life later on, especially, when you have families grow. So I'm just, I use that for a positive for these guys, that's all I can use it for.
Okay, so this, going to the incident that actually happened, this was a armed robbery that occurred at Miller's Outpost on January 12th, 1987, during which time you went into the store. There was an undercover police detective that was inside the store doing the surveillance on you, during which time he observed you go up to the clerk and tell the clerk that you wanted her to show him where the manager was. She took you back to the manager, you displayed a gun, you took him back to the safe while you were back there in the office. The manager got in a struggle with you. The officer confronted you and asked you to hold. You took him back into the office. Then subsequently, you took the manager, put a gun to his head, and took him to the front of the store where you were able to bleed. And there was a police pursuit. After that, during the chase, it says that you locked up the brakes and turned your vehicle toward the police car, causing the patrol car to strike the defendant. The vehicle, the officer lost control of his vehicle and struck a utility pole in the mailbox. And then it says on the following day, on January, well, it's not the following day, but about 2 weeks later, they saw you and decided to try to pull you over and got into a chase. And at one point in the chase, you almost crashed into an irrigation ditch along with the police officer. At that point, you backed into the side of the detective's car and then continued to drive away. After that, you turned your vehicle around and came directly at the detective's vehicle and almost created a head-on collision. And they called out the pursuit at that point in time, and then you were subsequently arrested later on at 2321 East Hampton. And at that time, the officers were able to take you into custody. So is that kind of about right, what we have in the pre-sentence report, what occurred during that period of time?
Well, everything that was kind of read, most of it's true, absolutely.
Okay. So, Mr. Bellis, this is what I need you, what I'd like you to do. Two things, sir. First thing I'd like you to do is tell this board in your own words what occurred during that period of time when you were arrested for this robbery, and why were you involved in that robbery?
During that time, I was going through a state of depression big time. And I had my parole officer in California. He wanted me to stay in the county of Los Angeles. And, my family, being young, I was in I thought this girl, she moved out to Mesa, so I came out to come to California. She sent me a plane ticket to come out here. I started working at Mission Brothers Restaurant, and my boss didn't record that. But, they eventually realized that I had been living out here, so I gave them the information, my checks first, and told them to sit on my hand. And finally, after that, he threatened to violate me, and I had no problem. Anyhow, things like that changed, and my mom, she knew that I had been really trying to do about it, and I wanted to settle down and marry this girl back then.
So, Mr. Bellis, tell me what occurred during this robbery.
Okay. I walked into the grocery market. I found a way to throw replica guns, the plastic gun on the shelf. I purchased it. I pulled the red cap off the that's under the barrels, and it looked like a real gun. And I walked into the mother's outpost, and then that's when I held it down the road. The waist there. So they didn't even see that it was a plastic gun. They just thought it was around that because it looked good. So I went to the back room, having to leave, and it shows the clerk. She called the manager went to the back room, and that's when he was opening up the safe, and the robbery detective, Don Rogers, came in, and he yelled, and the manager lunged at me. And announced that he was shooting. And thank God he didn't shoot. But I was very nervous, and I pushed the manager to the side so I can run away. And I guess that's what they the robbery detective says, that I put him in front of me. But he was in front of me. So when I pushed him to the side, they robbed me. Some of the bars, he didn't shoot, so he let him out the exit door. And that's when I ran up to the vehicle. And, speeding away, down Dawson. I remember that from 1986. And I was scared to death. I thought they were shooting from behind. And, and the police officer, was behind me because I kept moving back. And I remember hit the vehicles. Some of the things that the police reports, they said they couldn't, they couldn't say that I caused them to rent the vehicle because then they had to charge me for the vehicle and then charge me with another case and such. So the attorney told me, don't worry about it because that's just something they just have to say. So, so later on, they said they saw me someplace else and they tried to pull me over. Again, I was scared and I was with this woman, Yvonne Wilson. And, I was thinking with her because she had a piece of work on her from Sweden. And, I was working at Portuguese restaurant, and, she didn't know that I had done this. I had to put it down because my friend was from California. He won't be working anywhere. He wanted me to come back to California. So, it was just something so dumb. And I was scared for her. So I just, that's what I did. The police company, they arrived at me. I knew they were coming for me, and I told her that my girlfriend at that time that, I'm very sorry that, she's going to find out, and I apologize to her mother, and because I knew that it was something that was very, very bad, and I told her to apologize to the mother for me, information of the part when I was trying to investigate the hearing, and they arrested me on the parking lot in Sickler, and I believe that was the next one.
All right, sir, so you were paroled in 2012, and 2 years later, in 2014, your parole was revoked for drugs. So you were out 2 years, and you were doing good probably for about a year and a half before you relapsed and started back to using drugs. But tell this board, sir, why you deserve another opportunity to be released back out in the community, and that you won't be a danger of the community or threat within the community if you were released and you wouldn't be doing drugs.
Okay. I asked this question last year, why should you release me? And there's some course of time or not, and I think that question goes to my mind, and you know, I try to know that my intentions have been as well as much as 3.5 years of being here in this violation. You know, they've been wrong, and I have been studying, learning, teaching, and I've been growing mostly in faith and my ability, not just stay focused. I don't like drugs, I really don't. I can't stand them. And over the course of time, I've been they had a lot of Native American family on reservations, and you know, they did what they needed. And I didn't want to think about people that you hurt, their family and loved ones, besides people that you put in danger, you know, from drug use. I know that it's something that I never want to ever experience again. It's something that I know that I would have no problem avoiding, not going by, you know, I live passing next to this stuff, and the people that are involved in this kind of stuff, and the churches that I work with out there, you know, and I was ashamed, you know, that money that I had been using a drug, and even though it wasn't that much, it was still using any kind of narcotic, and I thought that guilt, I don't want that guilt, it's terrible, it's a terrible feeling, and I love my family, I love the church, I love my wife, and I do want to, I didn't doubt that. And then I had no action. I was at a tube, and I let down, and I actually was burning his house some time ago. And I realized that, and I realized it every day. And it's one thing I can look in the mirror, and I can honestly tell myself, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, stay focused. That's one thing that I know that I can, you know, while I'm on an authorization, help me people to, you know, be able to work in that. That's one thing, you know, it's going to be involved with the community, but I also think that through that council reservation, you know, while working with the churches and that, because I'm not having close contact with my parole officer and such, and everything will be getting permission from my parole officer beforehand. Well, I've already discussed this over 3.5 years that we were going the parole conditions very carefully, and, you know, every little thing, you know, if it caused a violation, and I realized that, and my wife and I didn't want to talk about it. You know, the tears and the prayers, you know, so that's one thing that she and I are both focused on. You know, we're calm at this time. This is our, I think this is my fifth time before the board members are. I have a peace. I have a very good peace, and I see the board members on the screen. It's not very clear, but, you know, I don't kind of grasp them. I know that I shouldn't see them on TV, and that, so I know you. You have a job to do, and you're very good at it, and I'm grateful, you know, that you allowed me this opportunity to speak. But like I said, I have focused on my life now. I've got all these classes that I've not only taken, but I've been teaching. And I have people like Mr. Westfall, who took part in my program, so they probably support together. These people have faith in my ability now to do well this time. And I don't intend to let anybody have this time.
All right, Mr. Dallas, I'm going to see if the board has any questions for you, sir. Mr. Kenyon.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Baez?
Yes,
sir.
Just a quick question, and it has to do with your drug history. Were you involved with using methamphetamine way back before you were convicted of this crime?
No, not at all. That's the opposite.
You have several violations inside the correction system leading up to your last parole of, with drug violations, so I wasn't sure when you were exposed to methamphetamine.
That's when I got my association prison, because I used heroin in prison and marijuana. And I'm not able to tell you, I'm just trying to hide from this reality. But when I was released, I was at the jail and I was trying, I had fallen asleep, overworking myself, and I was scared because I don't know if you get fallen asleep during a vehicle. That is the scariest thing in my life.
Sir, I'm not sure if I was clear on that. You said that you had used drugs inside the prison system, but had you tried methamphetamine inside the prison system? So I'm a little confused as to why you would take such a hard drug with so much at stake when you were granted your parole.
Well, they found the email related to drink and the monster drink, and I tried those, and they had the adverse effect on me. And I just didn't know because it's strong, and I was caffeine. So someone suggested to me, well, if you're going to do a little bit of this, you know, this one pill, you know, I really have a pill. Sometimes I wanted to have a pill, and sometimes I got scared, you know, after I took it, because, you know, sometimes they felt I could put up a little more than I had in the past, and that scared me. But I just didn't know what else to do. Well, I wasn't clear enough in my mind to I went up with my life and what my feelings was at stake and how my marriage and my relationship with God. You know, so, you know, as far as being in the custody, you know, I was an announcement for life, and I was calling to God, and I was saying, you know, asking for his help. And because I don't like drugs, I hate them. And, like I said, this is something stupid back then, and I see all these things on TV, you know, just, they have these supplements and that, which is fine, but you need sleep, you need rest, you know, and that's what they tell you, don't overwork yourself, because that can lead to problems.
So, I don't want to belabor this, but so you're saying you use methamphetamine in the form of a pill?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I have no further questions.
Ms. Redhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Weiss, do you have any children or stepchildren or other family here in Arizona?
Yes, Your Honor. I have my wife and married into the family. And I became an instant great-grandfather, so I was on and I don't know my great-grandfather. We had a great-grandson born a few months back in Texas. We have several grandchildren, and one little grandchild is expecting that she'll be home here in a few months in Florida. So yes, ma'am, I have quite a bit of family right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. John.
All right, sir. Mr. Dr. Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'm sure you told us the last time you came before us, maybe two or three times for myself, but I forgot. How did you get these drugs? Where did you get them from, sir?
When I was released.
Yes, when you were released. Where were these drugs coming from, sir?
Well, I told my parole officer, I can't believe about that, I was at the gym, and you know, there's things that are around that, supplements of sorts, and that, you know, most of it contains what the athlete she uses, and the federal is, but they have talent and professionalism, they're still,
But where were you getting them from? Were these your friends out on the streets? Were you buying them, or someone was donating them to you? How did you, I mean, you've been out there, you know, for almost 2 years you've been clean, supposedly. And so how did these drugs come into your life, sir? This methamphetamine.
Oh, I was at school coming back from work when I was in the afternoon. I was in the school for the I-17 heading back home. And it was right there, some guy was out there, and I was real tired and I was so sleepy, and I had a few more questions when I was driving home. And I thought, you know, I had been falling asleep on the freeway, you know, driving back from home from work. And, so I seen this guy outside of 7-Eleven, and you know, I asked him, does he know where I can, you know, get something out of how can you work? That's what I asked him. And so he says, well, I've got these pills, and so he told me, so I said, I asked him, how strong are they?
Where are they? He says
they're just like...
Did you know the man? Did you know the gentleman? Or you were just a stranger that you saw?
He was just a stranger. He was like... He was just a stranger.
Like he was hanging around
there by the
ice station
in front of the
7-Eleven.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Canales.
Yes, if it's not a violation of protocol, I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Grady while he's in the room. If that's okay?
Yes.
Mr. Grady, I recognize that we're in a parole hearing, but based on your training and experience as a parole officer, what are the, I don't want to say the odds, but how often is methamphetamine come up positive being taken like in a pill form? Because it's usually not what we see.
No, we don't see that either. I've never seen a pill form of methamphetamine.
Okay, I just wanted some clarification on that. Thank you, Mr. Grady. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Can I just ask one more minute? Because the doctor has said that it is amphetamines. So amphetamines and methamphetamines, are they the same?
No, they're different.
Okay.
Methamphetamine, because when you go to the doctor, he prescribes you something as amphetamine.
Okay.
For your sciences. But meth is a different form of that. So that's why we do the GCMFs and separate to see what's authorized and what's not.
Okay, because the reason I asked that because what he was taking was amphetamines, not methamphetamine. So it could have been in a pill form.
Well, sir, I think the positive was for on the confirmatory test. Pardon me, it says methamphetamine 837 milligrams.
That's what it says. Yes, sir. I agree.
Okay.
That's why I use the word methamphetamine.
Confirmation.
They get drowsy, so he cannot take caffeine in any come out. To speak to a stranger, it's what we do. We do speak to strangers. It's nothing unusual for us at all. The reputation that he has gained in the last 4 years, about 3 years, 3.5 years in prison, he is respected by the inmates and the staff. He is a constant source of encouragement, especially to the youngsters who have come in. Several of them are of Native origin, and he speaks to them and watches over them, and they come to him. His cell, his room, is a prayer room. That's the way it's turned out to be. Anyone who has problems at home, who has problems with each other, who is depressed, they come to him. Now, he tells me this, but he's not the only one who tells me this. They come to him and say, can we pray? And that's what they do. He's been instrumental in 12 baptisms in the past 3.5 years. I don't know how much you know about I'm trying to substitute a word for activities, programs at the prisons, but he has been and has proved to be an asset. I'm surprised that they would want him to go because he's to go away because he has been such a help and such an asset to the programs that they have. One thing which probably doesn't interest you at all, but I find it a source of interest. He never liked to speak to groups of people in Sunday school class or any place. He was a one-on-one person. However, he took the classes on the peer education program. And now he has no difficulty speaking to groups of people because the graduation included 15 minutes of a written essay which he spoke to guests, fellow inmates, including the deputy warden at that program. So he does this with confidence now, which is something 4 years ago, quite frankly, he could not have done. So I suggest he has stated, that he's learned more in the past 3.5 years than he did the previous 25. Now, the first hearing that I came to, I was frankly shocked that the board members went back 30 years to his record 30 years ago, and I thought at the time, I could not understand this. I had to ask him for an explanation of why that was done. And he said it was a reminder of what he was doing in there in the first place. So that was good. But each time, it's gone back 30 years. And I don't know about you, but he's not the same person he was 30 years ago. And neither is neither are most of the people I know. The family that you mentioned, I have three daughters and a son. He has met three of them. He has met several grandchildren. We have 13. We have 11 great-grandchildren. And of course we have the new baby boy, who's a great-great, and another one due in a few months. That particular granddaughter will have 5 daughters. So that's the family that he married into. Unfortunately, one time we were called a clan, but that's beside the point. It's time for him to come home. Home's where I am. Our plans, he was asked one time what his future plans were when he was released. I was tempted to make a list and just hand it out. Because the first day, he has to see the parole officer. He has to get his driver's license updated. He has to go to the VA, make an appointment for a full physical. He has to go into the house where we're going to live. And he has, when he's there, he has to get used to sleeping in a real bed. He has to get used to space. He has to start meeting our friends again. He has to get used to crowds of mixed colors and people. From what I've learned in the past few years, that's a very difficult thing to do. Fortunately, he did have the year and a half out. And we have friends, mutual friends from that time. We have mutual friends that we've acquired since then. In regard to his relationships with other inmates, we've started getting a phone call from others who are released immediately. They are released, they let me know that they're out, and that I should pass on the word that already they miss the friends they had in prison. It's not an easy thing to be released from prison after a number of years, and I found that out. I didn't know it before. Never occurred to me. This has been a whole new education in the past few years. I'm not sorry about that. I'm not sorry at all. I do not regret having married one who has been in prison. I certainly don't regret the friends we've made. I want you to know that not only does he feel like it's time to get out, I do too. It is definitely time for him to come home.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Valens. Does the board have any questions? Thank you, Ms. Valens. Okay, Mr. Valens, we're coming up on a conclusion on your hearing, sir. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board without repeating yourself, sir?
As always, I'm overwhelmed, but this time even more so, because just the peace that I have in my life, and I'm wondering, I always make people work, I was always on the, your judges, because you have a responsibility, I know a lot of people here, they don't take upon the end of work, but that's okay, and I explain to them. Was in an enemy attitude that came up there to do your job, and we are the ones who disobeyed, and not our lives. And for those who accept it, they walk away shaking their head, not able to believe it. Those who don't, I need a rule, and the Lord got the way. Thank you for everything, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
Okay. The board is now going into discussion, Mr. Valens. While the board is in discussion, so I'm going to ask you to stay on the phone. You can hear discussion taking place with the board. However, I'm going to ask you to remain silent. The board will make a decision whether to deny or grant you absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest, sir. The board is now into discussion after going over all the information, talking with Mr. Valens, looking at his past criminal history, in which he has an extensive criminal history, was, and he deals with burglaries and deaths that he has, but in his past criminal history, I didn't see going back to 1978 to 84. I didn't see any. There was no drug violations during that period of time. Mr. Valley says he wasn't doing drugs in that period of time. He started using the heroin while he was incarcerated in prison. When he was released in 2012, he was released on regular parole in 2012. When he was released, didn't say whether he was. They did try to get him into one program, and I was just a little bit trying to understand that he had definitely started using drugs and relapsed while he was out, which is why he was. And there was two times, there's numerous times where it was positive for positive for amphetamines, is where he started out, and it looks like it would be amphetamines, and then he wind up doing methamphetamines. It would test positive for methamphetamines. I don't know how that exactly is, but I do think that Mr. Valles does have a good family and good community support, that he has not been in any troubles since he's been reincarcerated with what he's done. I do think that while he was out, he didn't commit any other crimes other than doing the drugs, and his crimes have been mainly theft, grand theft auto, burglary that he actually committed while he was out. I would say that based on you know, that he does have good family support, that he did start using drugs while he was in prison. I do believe that he started using drugs while he was in prison after serving 26 years in prison, that he got out. He was out a year and a half, and kind of got overwhelmed with what was going on. But I think at this time now that I think his wife is here to support him, to work with him, to try to get him to another level. He has several church friends and relationships that he's going to be working with while he's been in prison. He's had the opportunity to counsel and talk with some younger inmates that have actually been incarcerated. He hasn't done any drugs, at least that he has been back incarcerated. And since 2011, I think, was his last incident in prison. And so I would be willing to give Mr. Valles the opportunity to be released on home arrest, as opposed to regular parole, where he could be more monitored and kept up with and put into some programs that would actually help and maybe assist him instead of just coming straight out on regular parole. That's my feeling at this time. However, I'm willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I agree with you. I'm concerned about the drug use, and there would have to be absolutely no alcohol use as well, but I could support home arrest.
Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I think a lot of it, I am open, and I'm looking really hard at his service inside the correction system, as well as programming. I think that I'm struggling a little bit. This is not saying I'm open. It's the accountability issue for what happened when he was on the outside the last time. Although, ultimately, I do agree with you. I think that he's certainly working hard. And I have some issues with like credibility and accountability. Sometimes when people, we tell the tale of what happened, you know, we take what we hear in good faith. But at the end of the day, I'm still looking very hard at his work inside the correction system, his programming, and support on the outside. I'd like to see how he does in home arrest.
Any other comments?
Yes, sir. I think that
Mr. Dr. Wright, let me get Mr. Neal first.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead, sir.
You might be last.
Yes, sir. Yes. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
I'll make it brief. I kind of agree on the issue of the drug
was the last time he was out, and he kept living there. But I also, in agreement that his work inside the prison is very, has been very valuable. Anytime somebody, a lifer can help somebody else, you know, that might be, if they say they want to come back after they've been released, it's great. I would say I'd be able to home arrest, but it would have to have the first miss, do whatever you may, then, you know, violating and getting back in. I have nothing for you.
Dr. Wright? Yes, sir. We're on the fence, and for various reasons, as his wife indicated, why do we go back 25, 30 years? That's one reason we go back 25, 30 years, because if we go back with the original offense, the incident offense itself, it did, in my opinion, based on pre-sentence report, it did involve a police officer, those vehicles. And anytime that happens, you know, that catches my attention, because it did involve, and he admits himself that that was a mistake on his part, that he should not have attempted to escape from the police, but that concerns me. Other thing that concerns me, anytime when one has already been given an opportunity, been given their freedom, and then they have to come back before this board, I am very much concerned. Myself, I'll just wait for your motion, but I'm still on the fence. Thank you so much.
Any other comments? All right, then I am going to make a motion to grant Mr. Richard Ballard's home arrest and deny absolute discharge or regular parole.
Okay.
Agree.
Disagree.
$65 after after 60 days.
Yes. And we have to verify that they have 2 months of living expense.
It said in the report that he had $30,000 in savings.
Oh, you're right, you did.
That was before.
Yeah.
That was the other correction. We no longer have $30,000.
Okay, so what do you have?
$20,000.
$20,000? Okay.
Did you put the storm revocation on the first missed?
The what?
The storm revocation on the first missed a little bit. We did it.
Very strictly EMAs.
It's not actually on this, it's not on this. Yeah, it's not on this.
You have to put it in.
You have to write it in if you feel that way.
Okay.
I would agree.
Yeah.
For those others who come in to be released, they're for parole, if they're lifers, and they're a lot, they have not usually taken that class, so they don't have that extra information that they need. Another thing that they did, and I've talked to several lifers who are now out, when they are so excited by getting out.
Let me interrupt, Ms. Roberts, because we have to move on with some other hearings, but.
I just thought you should know this.
Okay, but that's good, but those are things that you really need to report to, talk to the parole officer about. Yes, because we have no jurisdiction. This body has no jurisdiction over any of that. We have the jurisdiction here for whether we grant or deny the parole, and once that's done, we send that to the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Corrections then takes that from there. Okay?
I just thought you should know.
All righty, thank you. All right, Mr. Ballas?
Yes, first one.
Okay, sir, the board is voting to deny you regular parole or absolute discharge and grant you home arrest, sir. And you can see that there is some debate that we're having up here, sir, but we're going to give you a second opportunity to be out there, sir. It's going to be up to you as to what you do, sir. While you're on home arrest is just like being in prison, sir. You will be on a monitor. You will be on an ankle monitor. You will have to do everything your parole officer tell you to do. If you fail to do any of that, sir, you'll be coming back before this board, and you'll be violated again. Do you understand that? Do you understand all the conditions that I read out of the conditions of your home arrest, sir?
Yes, absolutely. I do understand.
Okay. Well, sir, it's going to be up to you. We wish you the best of luck, sir. We hope we don't see you before this board on a revocation here. We will see you after you have been released. After you have been released, we'll probably see you in about 6 months to get an update on how you're doing and what you're doing. Sir, we wish you the best of luck. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir.